Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to the end of the week. We like to call it Fri-yay around here. We got a sound effect or three for that, so hit it, man. Fri-yay! Yes, it is. You have reached the end of the week, and guess what? You've also each reached the last Friday of the Biden administration. Hey, if that's not cause for an extra round of laughter or celebration, I don't know what is. But welcome to a Fri-yay, and pushing buttons on the board is JP. How you doing, man?
I'm good. The last Friday of the Biden administration.
I'm hyped. I'm saying. Yes. It just feels different. It feels gooder.
That is a great birthday present.
Biden, I'm about to say it. You took the words out of my mouth. It's your birthday. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Now you got to push the buttons. Can you find, is there a whoop whoop over there? Is there an applause? What can we give you? Happy birthday, JP.
Appreciate it.
Outstanding.
Some people would say it's my Taylor Swift year of 22. I wouldn't say that, but some people have.
It's your Taylor Swift year?
That's what some people have said.
What does that even mean, your Taylor Swift year?
She had her song 22 that went viral, so apparently it's my Taylor Swift year.
Okay. As long as it's not haters going to hate, then we're all right. All right, hey, listen, we got a great show laid on for you. Speaking of JP, at 3:30 today, you know the deal. We got Fridays, so that means we got some JP on sports at 3:30. So he'll be in there. We have two rounds of JP on sports. First one's called the 3 and Out. The next one's called the 2-Minute Warning. And so, yeah, we'll run some JP on sports at 3:30. And then I got a triple dipper filled up with stuff. So hit it, man.
The triple dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the triple dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First one out the gate, D.C. gone wild. It's like I told JP before the show, I said the Democrats need to go ahead and just get out of town for a few days or somebody's going to get punched in the mouth. I mean, it's getting a little rowdy up there. It's getting a little weird. Things are happening. New things are happening. Some things are strange. Some things are different. Some things are better. Some things are just weird. D.C. gone wild. I'll give you a variety of anecdotes about that, to include confirmation hearings, as number one on the triple dipper. Number two, fiery consequences. So the fires in California of epic scale, these are considered to be among the most devastating wildfires ever to hit the state of California. And y'all, that is saying a lot. In the wake of all that, though, what are the consequences, politically speaking? What's going to happen with leadership who allowed things to be, you know, get worse, if you will, because they made really bad liberal progressive choices? Is anybody going to say anything about Bass? Is anybody going to say anything about Newsom? What's going to happen? So we're going to talk about the fiery consequences, number two on the triple dipper. And then number three, one of the biggest issues of the entire campaign season was the southern border. And we're not done. And even right now, Kristi Noem has been having her confirmation hearing on Capitol Hill to become the next Department of Homeland Security Secretary, and that would put the border under her purview. What is going on with the border? What is the latest? By the way, did you hear what Mayorkas said about it? I'll tell you about all of it. Number three on the triple dipper is going to be border wars. So y'all stay tuned for that one. All right, let me jump on into the Right Side Way opening monologue, and I'll remind you guys, every single day, the Right Side Way monologue is brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald. And I'll tell you more about Stan McDonald here in just a few minutes. So, the Right Side Way. A few years ago, I realized I had never actually read the classic book, To Kill a Mockingbird, by Alabama's own Harper Lee. I mean, how did that happen? How did I miss that one along the way? I mean, was it not required reading somewhere in my educational journey? Apparently not. A world-renowned Pulitzer Prize-winning classic with Alabama roots. So I found a copy and I commenced to reading and quickly saw why it was a classic. In 2006, a group of British librarians ranked To Kill a Mockingbird as one of the books that every adult should read before they die. It's a tale that has a lot of reality in it, of things that should never happen in any society, not the least of which is the abuse of the justice system. And despite being a work of fiction, there are some great truths in it. One of my favorite quotes of all time is in it. I have a notebook where I keep like favorite quotes, and I had written this one in there. It comes as the main character, Atticus Finch, is defending a black man in a trial against false claims, and he makes an impassioned plea to the jury. So if you don't mind, let me just read this quote to you. He said, quote, "But there is one way in this country in which all men are created equal. There is one human institution that makes a pauper the equal of a Rockefeller, the stupid man the equal of an Einstein, the ignorant man the equal of any college president. That institution, gentlemen, is a court. It can be the Supreme Court of the United States or the humblest court in the land or this honorable court which you serve. Our courts have their faults," he said, "as does any human institution. But in this country, our courts are the great levelers, and in our courts, all men are created equal." And I believe that, actually. I mean, I know that some want to say that our justice system is rigged against this kind or that kind, but I believe wholeheartedly that the even application of law in our society does set us apart from so many others in the history of the world. And say what you want, it is still the greatest system of jurisprudence in any country, in my opinion. What bothers me most recently, however, is when those laws are just flagrantly ignored by those whom we've entrusted to enforce them. You see, there's a new trend. We used to speak to the concept of activist judges, but now I believe we must also speak to the onset of a new trend of activists, that's prosecutors and political hacks who choose to ignore the law. I say all this as the news broke this morning that Joe Biden has just done it again. In a sweeping gesture that defies reality and makes no apology for its overreach, Biden just commuted the sentences of nearly 2,500 people in one fell swoop. For those of you liberals who still listen to this show, yes, I am aware that pardon power and the ability to commute sentences are vested in the chief executive of the president. He can do that. But just because he can doesn't mean that he should. Because what Joe Biden just did was create an unequal playing field. He decided, in and of himself, that there's just penalties he doesn't agree with. He didn't look at a case-by-case review of each request for a pardon or commutation. There's no way you can do that with 2,500 in one fell swoop. He looked at the duly enacted laws regarding criminal activity and decided that he knew better than the legislators who put those laws in place. He called it, in his statement, quote, "a chance to equalize sentencing disparities." Huh. He said he believed that there were distinctions between crack and powder cocaine. Apparently that somehow makes a difference. That laws have changed over time. That he needed to, quote, "right historic wrongs." The statement that was issued by his office ended by saying, quote, "with this action, I have now issued more individual pardons and commutations than any president in U.S. history." And he's right. He signed off on 1,500 or more just last week. And then he took nearly every one of the 40 federal death row inmates off of death row. And oh, by the way, lest we forget, he pardoned his son for anything and everything that may or may not have occurred between the years 2014 and 2024, to include Hunter Biden's dishonorable discharge from the Navy for drug use. I mean, the whole thing just boggles the mind. What Joe Biden just said to the world is that he's soft on crime, and he does not consider the work done by law enforcement or prosecutors to be near as important as his singular judgment. Meanwhile, law-abiding citizens watch and wonder if they would ever get such consideration. But this has been the trend. Activist prosecutors have been filling out the ranks as district attorneys in major cities, several of them funded during their elections by George Soros, the same George Soros who Joe Biden just awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Joe Biden, man, loved to coddle the criminals. But let me bring it home for you. That's Joe Biden, the chief executive of the country. What about mayors? What about governors? What about Mayor Randall Woodfin of Birmingham, Alabama, who determined on his own that municipal court drug possession charges should not be prosecuted? He went so far as to issue blanket exonerations of prior convictions in April of 2021, calling it his Pardons for Progress program. Birmingham City Hall actually has an Office of Pardons for Progress with its own website. Is that really his role? The laws are on the books and enacted by the legislature. Should a mayor of one of the largest cities in the Southeast United States be able to choose to disavow the laws? We're not talking about pardons on an individual case-by-case basis. We're talking about blanket exoneration because the executive just doesn't like the law. What signal does that send to law enforcement officers and prosecutors? Here's another one. Did you hear that the mayor of the small town of Springville, Alabama, decided a couple of years ago he was going to run for governor? Wasn't much of a campaign. I don't think he's much of a mayor either. In his own words, he was running for governor and he smokes pot. What? Yeah, apparently he wants to see that law change, but apparently he also isn't aware that not only has he chosen to be a lawbreaker, but that as governor, he would not be the one enacting the laws. Or would he espouse a position that says the chief executive of the state can pick and choose? Why not? Mayor Randall Woodfin does. Joe Biden does. And then there's Kay Ivey. And yes, she's a Republican, and yes, I'm going to call something out. You may have heard the legislature is once again considering the expansion of casino gaming in the state. Here we go again. Because surely that's the most important thing for us to be focused on. Well, let's put aside how any of you might or might not feel about casinos being placed around the state. The bill that was last considered was intended to write into state law that several gaming interests in this state who have been breaking our laws, literally breaking our laws, for years, would be rewarded with a monopoly and the divvying up of our state to give them ground to build more casinos. I thought, surely not. I mean, Governor Ivey's not going to stand for that. But would she? Apparently she would, as she issued a statement that said that enforcement of the laws on gaming was kind of hard. Hard. You heard me. The chief executive of our state thought it was just too hard to enforce the laws. So as a result, she was prepared to sign the legislation if the legislature could get it done. In her words, and this is a quote, quote, right now, gambling is going on. Much of it's illegal, and it's done in the shadows. We need to put laws on the books that control gambling, enforce it, and then be able to tell the people of Alabama that are the beneficiaries of the proceeds. Let me translate that for you into language of non-politicians. Gambling's illegal, but I don't have the will to enforce the current law. Let's just legalize it, and I'll try to be better at enforcing the laws once I know I can make some money off of it. That's what she's saying. I mean, I guess we could say that about prostitution or illegal drug use. Heck, let's open the floodgates to anything we're uncomfortable with having to enforce. Look, I got news for these executives at the local, state, and federal level. You have one job, just one. That job involves the enforcement of the laws of the land. You don't make the laws, you enforce them. Folks, the laws of this nation are to be enacted by the various legislative bodies at all levels and enforced by the executive branch. City councils pass things that mayors have to enforce. Governors have to enforce what the legislature does. And the president enforces what Congress does. And executives like mayors, governors, and presidents, they cannot choose to provide blanket cover for the abuses of legal systems by perpetrators, from the smallest drug possession case to the illegal gambling operations and those who don't pay taxes or whatever else. Pardon power is one thing. Commutations of sentencing, that's one thing. Looking at a case-by-case basis based upon a name-by-name appeal, I understand that. This is not that. This is executives choosing simply to say, I don't like that law. I'm just going to wipe it out and make it all null and void. But if we're to be a nation of laws, the laws must matter. It really boils down to that. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, crazy story when you think about it. I mean, Biden just literally says last night, you know, I just don't like the way the sentencing works. So it's going to go ahead and wipe those out. 2,500 of them in one fell swoop. 1,500 last week. Everybody off of death row for the most part. But then is that any different than Randall Woodfin doing the exact same thing in Birmingham? Or for that matter, how do you feel about the Republican governor of our state just saying the laws are too hard, I'd rather make it legal so I could tax it? I mean, that's just not their job. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama, and then way on up into Tennessee, too. Wow. Hey, listen, I told you a minute ago that attorney Stan McDonald is the sponsor of the Right Side Way Daily Monologue. Attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee in Huntsville, a 30-year veteran of the practice of law. And listen, I know Stan personally, and he is absolutely 100% a great guy. And yes, I do know for a fact that he has been a warrior on things that the Right Side Ruffian community cares about, even outside of the practice of law, for years. Now, look, attorney Stan McDonald, he has represented his clients in literally thousands of real estate transactions over the years. Stan McDonald knows how to represent you in every level of court, whether it be local, state, or federal. And I always say, if Stan McDonald's on your side, you're going to have no greater friend, and likewise, your adversaries will have no greater foe. Now, I'm going to tell you how to get in touch with him. If you need an attorney, I highly recommend attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee. He's an America First family man, and here's his phone number. Are you ready? 256 256-479-3020. That's 256-479-3020. And then here's the thing. No representation made. The quality of legal services before was great. The quality of legal services before the Apollo lawyers. Sort of. Like that.
You almost did it.
I almost did it. I'm trying to sound droll when I do it now. And droll and fast. Like, okay, here I got to say. Hey, we got a visitor in the studio. The lovely Charlene just walked in, and she happens to be toting a big old honking birthday cake for the JP. How about that? You want to show them the cake real quick? I mean, we could get sugared up here. Yes, there you are.
Nice chocolate cake.
Listen, I hope you like chocolate cake because you're about to take all that home with you because we're not going to be here this weekend. So happy birthday, JP.
Thank you. Thank you. I get chocolate cake and then Granny Ram strawberry cake on one weekend.
He got the text this morning.
Oh, man.
Thank you, Honey Pie, for bringing that by.
Yes, that's thank you very much.
I'm going to put it in the refrigerator.
All right. That's good. Aunt Charlene taking care of you.
As always.
As always. All right. Hey, listen, we got a whole lot of show laid on for you. Bye, baby. We got a whole lot of show laid on for you. Text lines are open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it. Same number for both. By the way, breaking news, as I am, Charlene and I have our plans to head up to D.C. for the inaugural event this weekend. We just got word that the inaugural has got moved inside and ain't nobody going to be standing on the Washington Mall watching it. It's going to be something like 20 degrees with a real feel in the single digits and snow.
Apparently it's the coldest inauguration in 40 years.
Yeah. The last one was the last one that had to move indoors was Ronald Reagan, right?
I believe so.
1985.
Yeah. I can just see our founding fathers looking down at us like, you wusses. Well, we were out there.
The founding fathers also didn't have, they had like a few sheep out on the front lawn in front of them when they were doing it. I don't know. Well, listen, there's lots of other doings going on in D.C. I'm just praying for the weather, and I know a bunch of y'all are going, too. If you're going, let me know. In the meantime, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. All right, let me jump on into the Right Side Way opening monologue, and I'll remind you guys, every single day, the Right Side Way monologue is brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald, and I'll tell you more about Stan McDonald here in just a few minutes. So, the Right Side Way. A few years ago, I realized I had never actually read the classic book, To Kill a Mockingbird, by Alabama's own Harper Lee. I mean, how did that happen? How did I miss that one along the way? I mean, was it not required reading somewhere in my educational journey? Apparently not. A world-renowned Pulitzer Prize-winning classic with Alabama roots. So I found a copy, and I commenced to reading and quickly saw why it was a classic. In 2006, a group of British librarians ranked To Kill a Mockingbird as one of the books that every adult should read before they die. It's a tale that has a lot of reality in it, of things that should never happen in any society, not the least of which is the abuse of the justice system. And despite being a work of fiction, there are some great truths in it. One of my favorite quotes of all time is in it. I have a notebook where I keep like favorite quotes, and I had written this one in there. It comes as the main character, Atticus Finch, is defending a black man in a trial against false claims, and he makes an impassioned plea to the jury. So if you don't mind, let me just read this quote to you. He said, quote, "But there is one way in this country in which all men are created equal. There is one human institution that makes a pauper the equal of a Rockefeller, the stupid man the equal of an Einstein, the ignorant man the equal of any college president. That institution, gentlemen, is a court. It can be the Supreme Court of the United States or the humblest court in the land or this honorable court which you serve. Our courts have their faults," he said, "as does any human institution. But in this country, our courts are the great levelers, and in our courts, all men are created equal." And I believe that, actually. I mean, I know that some want to say that our justice system is rigged against this kind or that kind, but I believe wholeheartedly that the even application of law in our society does set us apart from so many others in the history of the world. And say what you want, it is still the greatest system of jurisprudence in any country, in my opinion. What bothers me most recently, however, is when those laws are just flagrantly ignored by those whom we've entrusted to enforce them. You see, there's a new trend. We used to speak to the concept of activist judges, but now I believe we must also speak to the onset of a new trend of activists, that's prosecutors and political hacks, who choose to ignore the law. I say all this as the news broke this morning that Joe Biden has just done it again. In a sweeping gesture that defies reality and makes no apology for its overreach, Biden just commuted the sentences of nearly 2,500 people in one fell swoop. For those of you liberals who still listen to this show, yes, I am aware that pardon power and the ability to commute sentences are vested in the chief executive of the president. He can do that. But just because he can doesn't mean that he should. Because what Joe Biden just did was create an unequal playing field. He decided, in and of himself, that there's just penalties he doesn't agree with. He didn't look at a case-by-case review of each request for a pardon or commutation. There's no way you can do that with 2,500 in one fell swoop. He looked at the duly enacted laws regarding criminal activity and decided that he knew better than the legislators who put those laws in place. He called it, in his statement, quote, a chance to equalize sentencing disparities. Huh. He said he believed that there were distinctions between crack and powder cocaine. Apparently that somehow makes a difference. That laws have changed over time. That he needed to, quote, right historic wrongs. The statement that was issued by his office ended by saying, quote, with this action, I have now issued more individual pardons and commutations than any president in U.S. history. And he's right. He signed off on 1,500 or more just last week. And then he took nearly every one of the 40 federal death row inmates off of death row. And oh, by the way, lest we forget, he pardoned his son for anything and everything that may or may not have occurred between the years 2014 and 2024. To include Hunter Biden's dishonorable discharge from the Navy for drug use. I mean, the whole thing just boggles the mind. What Joe Biden just said to the world is that he's soft on crime, and he does not consider the work done by law enforcement or prosecutors to be near as important as his singular judgment. Meanwhile, law-abiding citizens watch and wonder if they would ever get such consideration. But this has been the trend. Activist prosecutors have been filling out the ranks as district attorneys in major cities, several of them funded during their elections by George Soros, the same George Soros who Joe Biden just awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Joe Biden, man, loved to coddle the criminals. But let me bring it home for you. That's Joe Biden, the chief executive of the country. What about mayors? What about governors? What about Mayor Randall Woodfin of Birmingham, Alabama, who determined on his own that municipal court drug possession charges should not be prosecuted? He went so far as to issue blanket exonerations of prior convictions in April of 2021, calling it his Pardons for Progress program. Birmingham City Hall actually has an Office of Pardons for Progress with its own website. Is that really his role? The laws are on the books and enacted by the legislature. Should a mayor of one of the largest cities in the Southeast United States be able to choose to disavow the laws? We're not talking about pardons on an individual case-by-case basis. We're talking about blanket exoneration because the executive just doesn't like the law. What signal does that send to law enforcement officers and prosecutors? Here's another one. Did you hear that the mayor of the small town of Springville, Alabama, decided a couple of years ago he was going to run for governor? Wasn't much of a campaign. I don't think he's much of a mayor either. In his own words, he was running for governor and he smokes pot. What? Yeah, apparently he wants to see that law change, but apparently he also isn't aware that not only has he chosen to be a lawbreaker, but that as governor, he would not be the one enacting the laws. Or would he espouse a position that says the chief executive of the state can pick and choose? Why not? Mayor Randall Woodfin does. Joe Biden does. And then there's Kay Ivey. And yes, she's a Republican, and yes, I'm going to call something out. You may have heard the legislature is once again considering the expansion of casino gaming in the state. Here we go again. Because surely that's the most important thing for us to be focused on. Well, let's put aside how any of you might or might not feel about casinos being placed around the state. The bill that was last considered was intended to write into state law that several gaming interests in this state who have been breaking our laws, literally breaking our laws, for years, would be rewarded with a monopoly in the divvying up of our state to give them ground to build more casinos. I thought, surely not. I mean, Governor Ivey's not going to stand for that. But would she? Apparently she would, as she issued a statement that said that enforcement of the laws on gaming was kind of hard. Hard. You heard me. The chief executive of our state thought it was just too hard to enforce the laws. So as a result, she was prepared to sign the legislation if the legislature could get it done. In her words, and this is a quote, quote, right now gambling is going on. Much of it's illegal and it's done in the shadows. We need to put laws on the books that control gambling, enforce it, and then be able to tell the people of Alabama that are the beneficiaries of the proceeds. Let me translate that for you into language of non-politicians. Gambling's illegal, but I don't have the will to enforce the current law. Let's just legalize it, and I'll try to be better at enforcing the laws once I know I can make some money off of it. That's what she's saying. I mean, I guess we could say that about prostitution or illegal drug use. Heck, let's open the floodgates to anything we're uncomfortable with having to enforce. Look, I got news for these executives at the local, state, and federal level. You have one job, just one. That job involves the enforcement of the laws of the land. You don't make the laws, you enforce them. Folks, the laws of this nation are to be enacted by the various legislative bodies at all levels and enforced by the executive branch. City councils pass things that mayors have to enforce. Governors have to enforce what the legislature does. And the president enforces what Congress does. And executives like mayors, governors, and presidents, they cannot choose to provide blanket cover for the abuses of legal systems by perpetrators, from the smallest drug possession case to the illegal gambling operations and those who don't pay taxes or whatever else. Pardon power is one thing. Commutations of sentencing, that's one thing. Looking at a case-by-case basis based upon a name-by-name appeal, I understand that. This is not that. This is executives choosing simply to say, I don't like that law. I'm just going to wipe it out and make it all null and void. But if we're to be a nation of laws, the laws must matter. It really boils down to that. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the southern U.S. of A. I'm talking about Huntsville over to Chattanooga, Tuscaloosa over to Gadsden. I'm talking about big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Okay, we've got so much going on right now. I mean, I don't even know where to begin. And I see you posted that a minute ago too, JP, on the Lake and Riley Act. Let's double check on that and see if that was the procedural. I was understood that was another procedural hurdle they had to get through today, and that they're not likely to pass the actual act while Biden's still in office because they don't want it to be transmitted to a point where he could then veto it.
Yeah. So let's
see if that was real.
I'm saying that it was a procedural.
Okay.
But that, I think what I saw was that, like, this kind of tees it up that it will get passed. So officially not passed yet. No.
Okay. But, yeah. Let's modify that post we just put up on social media then. But yeah, that's still very cool. That's nothing but good. And that's also, by the way, that's high praise for Katie Britt. She's fighting that bill, straight through the processes. And it's also a common sense bill. It's a no-brainer. I mean, this is the kind of thing that you look at and go, why would you not vote for this? All it does is say, you know what? If you're here illegally and you're detained for a crime, you're gone. We're not even going to mess around. If you're detained for a crime, and yes, I understand that detained might be different than actually convicted. But the reality is, why should we go through the processes of then putting you through a trial at taxpayer expense and providing you with, you know, housing and providing you with legal, you know, counsel, when the reality is you're not even supposed to be here? So how about we just punch you across the border? That's what that, and that bill also does one other thing too. It's very interesting. It opens up the Department of Homeland Security to be sued by states if they believe that illegal immigration is negatively impacting their state. I may have oversimplified it, but that's pretty much the gist of the bill. You got that good? All right, good deal. John from Huntsville checks it in. He says, Phil, spectacular monologue. Also, just wanted to let you know you won yesterday's show with an A++, despite talking too much about Jim Carrey. Okay. He says, by the way, JP, happy birthday. And speaking of Taylor Swift, she's only a few weeks older than me, and both of us are now officially old enough to run for president. So if she does decide to run, I'm probably going to run against her. And JP, you can vote for me, and I'll make sure every Alabama sports team has all the best coaches and players so they can make the playoffs in every sports in 4 years.
I don't think the president can do that. I think that's a bit of an overreach there.
Well, apparently John's into big government. Yeah. Allie from Athens checking in saying, To Kill a Mockingbird is not entirely a work of fiction. It is based in part on a case that was tried by Harper Lee's father. Excellent monologue, Senator Williams. I did not know that, Allie. You just squared me away. You're nodding your head like you knew that.
So we read that book when I was in high school, and I remember that during our study on it, the teacher mentioning that. Yeah.
I did not know that. Okay. Well, all right. I have learned something new about something important. Thank you, Allie. Appreciate you. David from Bucky's says, Phil, did you see where Biden said the ERA was law? I did see that. I need to dig into that and find out what he really means, but I don't think he has the ability to just enact it. I think what he's doing is basically reinterpreting prior precedent, and I don't know that it's going to stand. David, thank you very much, and I'll probably be doing a segment on that very soon. TL from Huntsville says, happy birthday, JP. It'll be easy for you to remember what you were doing last Friday of the Biden administration. Set Biden aside and enjoy your special day anyway.
Nice. I deem the inauguration as my birthday gift.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
we did it all for you, man.
Yes, sir. Everybody voted him in for me.
Thank you to all the millions of people who voted for JP's birthday. All right. Hey, listen, I'm going to do this first section. I'm calling it DC Gone Wild. And y'all, listen, it's getting saucy up there. It's getting punchy. And there's some good stuff happening. There really is. And there's a different feel. I mean, even from afar, you can tell there's a different feel in DC right now. There's also, oh, by the way, there's also some new stuff happening, strange and different, perhaps. There's also some things going on that you look at and go, my gosh, could y'all just please act like adults? Doesn't always happen, though. But, like, I mean, just in terms of, like, the different feel. So here's one that I've never seen before. Dipper number one here is called DC Gone Wild. So like, changes in the air, right? New stuff, crazy stuff. Did you see the story? Daily Caller has this one, Dateline last night. Donald Trump appoints John Voight, Mel Gibson, and Sylvester Stallone as special ambassadors. We got Rocky, Braveheart, and the Secretary of Defense from Transformers that are now special ambassadors to the White House. That's very... This is different.
Yeah. I didn't even know you could have an ambassador to a city or a place like that, like within the state or the country.
I think this is less the city or the community and more the thing, you know, the essence of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because movies get filmed everywhere. Hollywood is like Grand Central Station for the producing and the big, you know, sets and all that kind of stuff. But I really think this is talking about relationship with Hollywood, the thing, as opposed to Hollywood, the place.
Yeah.
Donald Trump leaned on some of his famous friends to help influence Hollywood in an announcement that he shared on his Truth Social. The president-elect tapped three major celebrities, and I just said them, John Voight, Mel Gibson, and Sly Stallone, to be special. This is how he worded it. You ready? This is classic Trump. To be special ambassadors to a great but very troubled place, Hollywood, California. He said, they will serve as special envoys to me for the purpose of bringing Hollywood, which has lost much business over the last 4 years to foreign countries, back bigger, better, and stronger than ever before.
That's, yeah.
What is he? I don't know what he's saying here. He says it will be, by the way, he ended with this, that it'll be like the United States of America itself, the golden age of Hollywood.
Hey, I'm here for it. And by the way, I think Mel Gibson is the perfect person to do that.
I think he absolutely is.
I love Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson's been one of my favorite actors since. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, the first time I ever now Mel Gibson in Road Warrior is always going to be one of those classic cult movies that I love. But the very first Lethal Weapon, and I'm being serious when I say this, there was a scene in the beginning, towards the beginning of the movie, where he was contemplating suicide, and he was sitting there wrestling with it. And he acted that scene so well that it was hard to watch. Mm-hmm. Just the emotion on his face. That guy can put more emotion in his face than any actor I know of.
Yeah. And, I mean, he was just on Joe Rogan last week talking about his faith and, on a massive platform like that about why he believes what he believes. And also said that he currently is working on a script and almost done with it, doing a resurrection movie. Cause he did The Passion of the Christ.
Wow.
And he's dedicating a movie to just the resurrection itself. So I'm glad he is the perfect ambassador for that.
Oh man.
That new position that Trump made.
Well, we'll see what it means. I mean, I don't know what it means. What is an ambassador to Hollywood, making Hollywood great, like the golden age of Hollywood again? Is he gonna encourage them to make movies that are patriotic? Is he gonna just say, hey, have a good relationship with the White House? It would be helpful. Or is he gonna say, hey, we'd like for you to do something about this thing and make it look good? I mean, you don't want the White House influencing what the movies are. Although we did that in World War II.
It's true. I think that's just a
and nobody minded.
That's true. I think that, I mean, this mainly, like you said, is just a vessel for, you know, somehow for Trump and his administration to have an impact to get the woke out of Hollywood.
I think that's it. I think it's get the woke out of Hollywood. I think it's allowing. I think too, these three guys and others like Chris Pratt and people who Zachary Levi, who don't mind saying, oh yeah, by the way, here's my faith. Oh yeah, by the way, I love my country. Like when Tom Cruise did, we're off on a total tangent here.
That's a good one, though.
But it's a good one. But when Tom Cruise did Top Gun Maverick, you've seen Top Gun Maverick.
Obviously, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, just checking. But when Tom Cruise did Top Gun Maverick, the appeal was so great. And I think it was because we were coming out of COVID. We were coming out of the Afghanistan debacle. And I think the nation was just hungry to be told we're okay. And it's okay to say we're okay. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching that movie and just almost feeling relieved that it had the message that it did.
They didn't wokeify it. It had the same message as the first one.
And by the way, since the first one was such a classic in part of my early years, I think they did a great, you know, they paid homage to the original. They tied it all together so well.
They didn't mess it up.
They did not mess it up.
It's very easy to mess up a sequel after, you know, the first one's so iconic.
Listen, I can still remember driving to U.S. Army Airborne School, driving to Fort Benning with like a cassette tape of the Top Gun soundtrack, Danger Zone, playing so loud that I was just fired up because I was going to go be a paratrooper. And I was like, driving to the Danger Zone. But that's just, you know. So, yeah, they can't screw with that movie. Like, please don't ever remake Braveheart. Thank you. I'm a little worried they made a Gladiator 2. I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
I haven't seen it. I just don't know how it's going to go. Anyway, all said and done, what's happening in D.C.? D.C. gone wild? Well, one of the things that just happened is Trump just appointed three great Hollywood conservative actors to be his special envoys to Hollywood. What does that even mean? I don't know. That one's kind of a cool story. Some of the stuff I got in my stack here when we get back from the break, I'll just tell you, is not near as cool. And some of it's like an adventure in woke world moment. And others are things that you look at and go, somebody needs to punch him right in the mouth. just saying. We'll have all of it when we get back from the break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, so I got a bunch of text messages. Let me grab a few of those real quick. Bruce from Spring, I take it back. Jeff from Athens. Jeff from Athens was first. He says, I know the temperature is a factor. Okay, we're talking about the D.C. inauguration. So if you haven't already heard, the inauguration itself, the ceremony in which Trump and Vance and the others are sworn in, the inauguration itself has now been moved indoors for the first time since 1985. The last person to do that because of extreme weather was Ronald Reagan, 1985. Trump's ceremony will now take place inside the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol. And apparently they're going to make an opportunity available to some, I don't know who, that will have tickets to the Capitol One Arena, but that only seats 20,000 people. So now what? So, Charlene and I are planning on heading up there, and we'll just see what it means. Anyway, Jeff from Athens says, I know the temperature's a factor. However, could there have been a credible threat and POTUS use this as good cover? Certainly could have.
See, that's what I initially thought before I read it was weather. I thought that they were like, you know what, there's too much threat. There's, you know, we're strand too thin in terms of, you know, I don't know. I thought maybe that was the reason, but, I mean, it probably is the most safest option.
I cannot deny that it's going to be super freaking cold up there. I mean, it's going to be, like they say, it's going to be like 21 degrees with a real feel of like 9. And a wind chill that's like even worse. And then snow on the ground. They're saying 1.5 to 2 inches of snow by the time Monday comes around. So it could be dicey. And that means that a lot of people are traveling into the D.C. area to flood the mall. And then that creates all kinds of hazards for people who have weather-related injuries. Cars that get stuck, then, you know, jamming up the public transportation, trying to get back out. So, I mean, I get it. I am sure that right now the Capitol Police and the National Guard and the Secret Service are like, oh, good.
But that's for sure.
But anyway, Bruce from Springville says, I believe the move to have the inauguration indoors is divine intervention. It's in order to protect Trump. And that may be true, too. Protect him from, you know, what all we don't know. But, you know, I have a friend who was actually on an FBI call about the event, who let me know that right now they have no announced credible threats that are organized or seen as being, you know, foreign agent related, but their biggest concern is lone wolves, like the guy in New Orleans. Kathy from Madison says, hey, Phil, I'm going to the inauguration with my husband, mother-in-law, and stepson. Three generations of Patricks from Scottsboro, Alabama are going. This will be our first inauguration, and we plan on being peaceful. If you have any tips for the inaugural parade, please share. You know what, Kathy, I'm figuring it out, too, as I go along.
You're in the same boat.
I've got a whole file full of stuff over here in my notes on where to be and when. But good. I mean, I hope to see you. There's a whole bunch of Alabama folks going up there, so that'd be awesome to run into some ruffians up there. June Bug from Hartsel says, happy birthday to JP.
Thank you.
He seems like an amazing young man, she says. And you know what? She's right. Says, Phil, your monologue is fantastic as usual. Thank you so much. Says, I have loved To Kill a Mockingbird since it was required reading in the ninth grade. The movie with Gregory Peck is high on my favorites as well. As for Biden and Woodfin, none of that's surprising. For Kay Ivey, I don't understand why someone at the end of her tenure is satisfied with soiling her name and legacy. It's very sad on many fronts. I pray that my reputation will increase in favor with God and man as I grow older, and I would love to talk to Governor Ivey about how to make that happen in her own life. Junebug, what an amazing, can I have some applause for her? What an amazing text that was. Thank you so much for that. Badger from Athens saying, happy birthday, JP. Lewis from Trinity says, did you hear there's a Top Gun 3 in the making? No, I did not.
I hope not.
And then also, by the way, he says the story is that when Mel Gibson showed up for the casting call for Road Warrior, he had gotten into a fight the night before and he had a big old black eye, and I guess that helped. He got the part. If you've ever go back and look at Road Warrior, especially if you see the original Mad Max, he was so young. I mean, he was probably in his 20s. But I'm telling you right now, the original Mad Max car, the V8 Interceptor, as a car guy, I would not kick that out of my garage.
You would let it stay?
I would let it stay. Kenan from Huntsville says, if any country refuses to take back an illegal alien, we ought to send them to Ukraine. Okay. He says, now that I think about it, we ought to do the same for any illegal who fails to turn themselves in for deportation. Anyone who opposes this must hate Ukraine. Okay. Thanks, Kenan. Man, the texts keep coming in. A bunch of them saying, happy birthday, JP. Let me get a couple more. We might go to the top of the hour on all these. Mike from Florence says, the main thing is to get the conservative actors knowing that it's safe to come out of the Hollywood closet. Yes, exactly. Thank you. I meant to say that a minute ago, and Mike, thank you for reminding me. He says, the rest will follow, i.e. good movies and TV without all the focus. That's where I was headed a minute ago when I said Chris Pratt and all the others. I think what they're doing is they're giving an opportunity for there to be a goodwill, like, okay, there's like a club that I could be a part of where it's cool to be conservative in Hollywood. James Woods, you know.
And these aren't small. Like, these are A-list names.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Stallone and Gibson and all them.
And I think Clint Eastwood would rank among them.
Yeah.
Did you ever see his empty chair speech at the convention about 10 years ago?
I probably have. I'm not recalling at the moment.
Awesome. But yeah, I do believe that there is a segment of Hollywood. In fact, I hear it all the time. The ones who are willing to be outspoken say that constantly they get from others, man, thank you for speaking up. I can't say it because I'll lose my next, you know, gig. But it shouldn't have to be that way. And I tell you what they're going to have to do. They're going to start getting producers. The actors are beginning to come out of the woodwork now. But they're going to start getting the producers and directors to speak up too, mm-hmm. who are willing to say, hey, you can be in my flick.
Yeah, and also, they're seeing that the movies that are, you know, not woke and are about loving the country and religious and such, those are the ones that are doing much better than the woke movies.
Did you see the thing about the podcast and Joe Rogan moved to number two?
Yeah.
A Catholic faith-based podcast suddenly shot to number one and supplanted Joe Rogan as the biggest podcast in the nation.
I've seen that, yeah, and Tucker Carlson, when he started, did the same thing. I don't see any left or podcasts doing that or anything, woke, going up, shooting up that ladder.
Call Her Daddy's not number one yet?
news to Kamala.
Isn't there an abortion-related, like, young lady sex show transgender thing that can certainly be number one?
I don't think so. Not quite.
No? I don't think so either. All right. More on D.C. Gone Wild. We get back. Have you heard what Democrat staffers requested? What do they want to do? They want what kind of a work week? Seriously, they put it in writing. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee's news talk leader, Phil Williams, here in the Right Side Studios, live, local, state, and national. Man, we got all the issues. And yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Friday. The last Friday, by the way, of the Biden administration. Thank you. Thank you very much. Can I have some applause? I think that's worthy of it. Thank you. Thank you very much. On his way out the door. Thank you. By the way, I'm in Dipper number one, and y'all text in if you want to. Y'all are some texting machines today. I'll catch up with a few more of those here in just a minute. 833-687-4448. So I'm doing my first Dipper. I'm calling it DC Gone Wild. There's some crazy stuff happening in D.C. right now. Some of it's like a hoot as we watch conservatives finally being given an opportunity for a voice. Some of it's like nuts as you look at like this story from redstate.com. Dateline, last night. So here's the headline. Spoiled brat Democrat staffers plead with congressional leaders for unreal perk. There's a heck of a headline. Did you hear the story, JP?
I saw a bunch of headlines. I didn't read into it much.
So, yeah, the story starts off by saying modern-day Democrats have never been known to excel at reading the room.
Yeah.
But so here's the bottom line. There's a whole bunch of staffers in Congress, all of whom work for progressive, you know, Congress members, and they have their own organization they call the Congressional Progressive Staff Association. Awesome. You got to know that's a room full of great ideas.
Yeah. That's riveting stuff going on in that room.
They sent a letter to the Speaker of the House. They really did. I saw a copy of it. They sent a letter to the Speaker of the House and to the House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. And what they're asking for is for them to, quote, here's a quote, quote, consider adopting a proposal that would improve worker satisfaction, increase staff retention in Congress, and model a more sustainable approach to work on a national level. What do they want? A 32-hour work week. They work for friggin' Congress.
Yeah.
Do you know what an honor it is? Most people don't go up there to be career staffers. They go up there for an opportunity to serve for a while, work hard for a bit, put it on their resume, and then go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. The majority of staffers up there are, you know, folks your age and others, maybe a little older, that unless they're in one of the key positions, like a chief of staff kind of job, they're going to be working some long hours. And you know what? If the congressperson calls and you got to have some notes ready, you just better do it.
That is an honor to do that position.
It would be.
It's
yeah. Absolutely. They want to know if when Congress is in session, if they could be entitled to an abbreviated 20% lighter schedule also. So basically what they're saying is they want a 32-hour work week when Congress is not in session, and they want at least 20% lighter on their schedule even when Congress is in session because, you know, the people's business is secondary to their comfort. That's what we're looking at. This is unbelievable to me. They do have one advocate. Who would that be? Who do you think it would be?
AOC.
Close. Bernie Sanders.
That was my second guess. Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, so they also think that once this is proven to be sustainable in Congress, like what we think you ought to do then is roll this out in legislation for the whole nation. We're here with good ideas, and we think things. And by the way, we would need extra coffee breaks so that we can go at our double soy lattes from Starbucks and our gluten-free like milk, whatever that is. I don't know what it is. Okay. I'm going to bet they bring Juicy Juice in their snack boxes too.
Yeah.
What do you think?
For sure.
Yeah.
The gluten-free lunch pack.
Exactly. Lunchables.
Yes.
Everybody needs a lunch, a snackables. All right. So, that's just crazy. All right. How about this one? You heard my monologue earlier. Biden did this last night. I pulled one a copy of it. This is Dateline this morning. The story broke this morning as I was getting up at like 4:45. President Biden announced Friday morning he is commuting the sentences of nearly 2,500 inmates. And he's proud of it. This is what's called a blanket pardon. This is what's called a blanket pardon that does not necessarily apply to a specific case in which there was some egregious act by the prosecutor, or somebody withheld evidence and now we need to look at this again, or somebody, you know, said I was treated unfairly because of my race or whatever the case may be. No, none of that. This is simply a case of Biden just doesn't like that kind of sentencing. He doesn't like that kind of thing. So I'm just going to do 2,500 of them in one friggin' whack. That's what he just did. He did 1,500 like 9 days ago. He did his son Hunter. If you remember, he did Hunter Biden for everything that, and this is the way they actually worked, everything that happened or could have happened within an entire 10-year period. In other words, Hunter's been really jacked up for 10 years. I'm going to excuse it all. And then he took every, like I think 95% of the people on federal death row, he just took them off death row. This is absolutely not what the pardon and commutation power was designed to do.
And then some of those death row inmates were
oh yeah,
not wanting to be taken off.
Two of them said, we don't want to be taken off. We're not going to sign on to it, because they believe that affected their appeal. It removed the level of scrutiny that they would get at the Supreme Court. Great memory. I forgot about that part.
And people forget, too, 2022, he did that with all the, I can't remember the number of the marijuana charges in federal prison. They're racking up.
They are racking up. So this is absolutely not what it's for. The crazy thing is he's proud of it. It's not like he did it grudgingly, like I feel like I have to take a measure here that I believe is very important for the nation. No, he said, with this action, I have now issued more individual pardons and commutations than any president in U.S. history. It's not a race. This is not a competition. You have nothing to be proud of. I've gotten more criminals off than anybody else who's ever been in my office. What is your actual point? Except that you're soft on crime. And you don't believe in reviewing things on a case-by-case basis, you're just going to go ahead and say that legislative action that put the laws in place is not near as important as your singular judgment about the actual laws. Not the people who were convicted, but the laws. And that's just absolutely asinine. Okay, but here's the thing. I just realized as I was scanning a few of my notes before I went to break, or while I was in the break, before I came back on. They're already afraid that Trump's actually going to pardon a whole bunch of Jan Sixers. And he should. And my understanding is he's already been reviewing all the files. And he's weeding them out. And he's making sure he doesn't have any violent criminals in there that would get pardoned and they shouldn't be. And I get that. But here we have President Biden issuing massive thousands and thousands of blanket pardons. And yet Pam Bondi, the future attorney general for the U.S., was being pinged by Adam Schiff during her confirmation hearing. Adam Schiff, old Shifty. And Shifty asked her, would you advise the president against blanket pardons? Do you see the hypocrisy here?
Yes, yeah. And not only hypocrisy, but that hypocrisy with her asking if she would allow him to go after political opponents. Are you gonna let Trump do what Joe Biden's doing right now?
Yeah. By the way, Adam Schiff, are you gonna let Joe Biden let Donald Trump do what I did?
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, I tell you, one of my favorite moments. This is part of the DC Gone Wild thing. So yeah, Pam Bondi. This is off Fox News Dateline yesterday. Pam Bondi, during her hearing, Adam Schiff was one of the most vocal critics, and he was wearing her out on questions that were just ridiculous. And they got into a sparring match. And at one point, she says, he said, I'm sitting here today asking whether you are aware of a factual predicate to investigate Liz Cheney. And her response was, Senator, no one has asked me to investigate Liz Cheney. That's a hypothetical. And so then she looks at him and says, what you should be worried about is the crime rate in California. That's where he's from. Crime rate in California is through the roof. Your robberies are 87% higher than the national average. That's what I want to focus on, Senator. He didn't appreciate it.
No, he did not.
No, he did not. Then he wants to know, would she tell Trump he lost the 2020 election? I'm like, y'all, it is 2025.
Yep.
Joe Biden's been president. There's no way to go back and reclaim that. You want to keep rehashing that ground because that's the only talking point you got left. But here's the funny thing. At one point, she looked at him and she said, I'm not going to mislead this body. You were censured by Congress Senator for comments like that that are so reckless. In other words, she pointed out, you're giving me hypotheticals on things, and you were the one who was actually called on the carpet by your own body for this very thing. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, listen, we're going to take a break right now. We'll take the break. We'll come right back. I got a little more on this. D.C. gone wild. In fact, I got a lot more. Can I cram it all in? I don't know. You guys are texting in, too. We'll take care of it. We'll get it all. 833-687-4448. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades in here. That's what we're doing. Devin from Brownsboro texted in. He says, hey, when's the next episode of The Right Philosophy? And he said, happy birthday, JP. Yeah, thank you very much. The Right Philosophy podcast just came out Wednesday. New episode every Wednesday. That's the podcast that I do. Right Side Media, our parent company here, we have four additional podcast lines aside from the podcast of the show itself. And the four additional that I'm talking about are also video podcasts. Emily Jones from Moms for Liberty does one called Controversial Mom. Birdman does one called Right Click that uses high tech and gaming as the backdrop for conservative views. And then former Navy SEAL Jared Hudson also does one called The Liberty Minute. They're all great. So thank you very much, Devin, for asking. By the way, Butters just reminded me a moment ago on the Right Side Report newsletter that we've got going out. Every day, by the way, if you're not getting it, you can, real easy, 833-687-4448. Just text the word newsletter to that number, and it'll send you an automated reply that lets you, sign up for our daily free email newsletter with all our updates and things about podcasts and all of it. Anyway, he reminded me, we got a poll going on there. Which one is the most important confirmation? Right now, Pete Hegseth is still in the front, so do the poll. It's open for, I think, is today the last day of that poll? It's a weekly.
Today's the last day.
Yeah, today's the last day of the poll. So if you want to try and alter the outcome, get on it.
Right now, Pete Hegseth in the lead.
Hegseth in the lead. Line one, I got a call. Let me grab it. Line one, Dave from Huntsville. Hey, man, how are you? We can lose Dave? Dave. Did we lose Dave?
Sounds like he's not there.
Okay. He's not there. I'll keep calling. Dave, call back if you want to. So here's the thing. I'm talking about DC gone wild. I don't know if you saw this, but I mean, there have been a number of things during the confirmation hearings that have been like great one-liners and key moments that also tell you what things are going to be like. So Scott Bessent is Trump's nominee to lead the Treasury Department. And he got into it with Bernie Sanders, which ain't hard to do. But so Biden said in his farewell address, I don't know if you saw that speech of the night, I talked about it in my monologue yesterday, but that an oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth and power and influence that literally threatens our entire democracy, our freedoms, our rights, our fair shot for everyone to get ahead. In other words, what he's saying is there's too many rich guys on the Republican side now. Okay. Never mind the fact he just gave George Soros a Presidential Medal of Freedom like a week ago. But the truth is, this is laughable. Bessent looked at Sanders, who was agreeing with Biden, and calling out like Elon Musk. I mean, Sanders is calling him out by name, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and Mark Zuckerberg. And Bessent looked at him and said, the three billionaires you listed all made their money themselves. And Mr. Musk came to the country as an immigrant. And then Sanders cut him off and asked his question again, and he said, well, I would note that President Biden gave the Presidential Medal of Freedom to two people that I think you would qualify, that would qualify for his oligarchs, meaning George Soros and David Rubenstein. This is the nuttiness we have. This is the absolute nuttiness that we have in D.C. right now. As the Democrats are slamming these confirmations these nominations, the candidates for nomination, with things they've been doing themselves. I mean, it just like Adam Schiff, how dare he ask the questions? Would you try to oppose a blanket pardon, meaning January 6th, when Biden just did big blanket pardons the night before? You got this whole thing about oligarchs when they'll take money from George Soros if he'll dole out. Just, it's unreal. Here's another one for you. Just to sweeten the pot. Lee Zeldin, former congressman, is going to be the head of EPA, we hope. he had his committee hearing. He was asked how he's going to, basically what he said was, I'm going to make sure that we harness the greatness of American innovation and conservation and environmental stewardship all at the same time. He said, basically, there's a way that we can protect our precious environment without suffocating the economy. And he's going to make sure that we look at energy dominance again, revitalize the auto industry to bring back American jobs. And all this, a lot of this falls, keep in mind, the EPA was a part of where the Keystone Pipeline was held up for years under the Obama administration. And then, you know, there are things that get killed with the regulatory stuff that comes out of the EPA. But the other thing he said that I thought was real key, and this is important, there has been a move by liberals and establishment folks in D.C. to almost like weaponize every single department. One of the things that they saw more and more occurring during the Obama era and then under Joe Biden is they would arm EPA officials and they would actually do raids on people's businesses. EPA. And like during the confirmation hearing with Lee Zeldin, a Republican senator from Dan Sullivan from Alaska asked him about this. He says, I don't believe in armed bureaucracy. The EPA is acting like a SWAT team. Do you believe the EPA should even have armed agents? He asked Lee Zeldin. And Zeldin said, Senator, it's outrageous. He said, as someone who's going through this job transition to be asking questions like, how did that even get authorized? Who signed off on that? What are the standards that need to be met in order to even say yes to an operation like that? It's a whole new day when you think that we've had armed EPA agents and FBI agents arresting grannies for praying in front of abortion clinics. And you've got, you know, any number of lawfare issues and they're questioning the Pam Bondi as if she's going to be committing lawfare. And right now, article I'm not even having a chance to get to, townhall.com, Democrats are terrified of Kash Patel leading the FBI. Well, they should be. They should be. It's just, that's the way it's going to be. Hey, JP, let my caller know that we're not going to be able to get him now because we're doing JP on sports next, so we won't be able to get to him. But listen, there's a whole lot of stuff happening in D.C. And Trump's asking people to resign, which is cool. He should. Three State Department officials have been asked to resign by the Trump transition team. Oh, and by the way, did you hear? The FBI closed its DEI office. Funny how that worked out. Suddenly they don't need DEI anymore. And then I guess the last thing that's funny that I'm not even getting a chance to get to is RFK hasn't even had a hearing yet. And all of a sudden the FDA is banning red dye number 3. Bring it, baby. All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll come right back with some JP on sports. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the southeastern U.S. of A. I'm talking about Huntsville over to Chattanooga, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden. Big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. All right. Hey, we're going to go to this segment we like to do on Fridays. So in case you did not know, JP is like the man on sports. Has his own sports show called Off the Bench on Saturday mornings on the Ump out of Huntsville. 2 hours, 9 to 11? Is that right?
9 to 11, yes. And I saw John Paul texting and asking if we're doing a show tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow will be a live show. We weren't able to do one last week, but National Championship Week, we got to do a live show.
Gotta.
That's the biggest show of the year.
So I guess by the saying that, you're premiering things that might be in your discourse here in just a moment.
Yes, yes.
All right, well, let's do this. So JP on Sports is a segment we like to do on Fridays, and we do it in two waves. The first one comes through as we call it the three and out. He takes the top three stories he thinks are out there in his mind in sports and lays them out there for us. And then we come back from a break and he does the 2-minute warning. Anything in the world of sports, 2 minutes at a time with a buzzer that sounds if he goes over 2 minutes. And you got a sound effect. So hit it, man. JP on sports. All right. So, all right, let's do it. Three and out. What's number one? What you got?
Well, I just mentioned it. It's National Championship
Week. Yeah.
National Championship on inaugural day. It's going to be quite the day.
Is this all part of your birthday weekend?
It is. It's a bunch of great gifts I get on my birthday weekend. But yeah, National Championship between Ohio State and Notre Dame. You know, I predicted Ohio State would make the national championship, and, you know, now that they're going up against Notre Dame, I'm a bit split because I really want Notre Dame to win. I like Marcus Freeman. I like Notre Dame. Notre Dame is beyond due to get a national championship. It's been a long time. But Ohio State, just on paper, is playing the best of anybody in the nation. They got the best roster in the nation, and they're finally playing like it in the playoffs. They just beat Texas and shut them out, like, really, really well.
Hard.
You know, like, it was kind of close at halftime, but then the second half, Ohio State just pulled away with it. So, my gut says Ohio State in this one, but like I said, Notre Dame has been playing really well. Riley Leonard has been playing very well. Marcus Freeman has a lot of momentum behind this Notre Dame team. They beat a really good Penn State team, and were able to shut them out. So, I don't know. I think it'll be closer than the rest of Ohio State's games, but right now I'm still thinking Ohio State's going to edge this one out, and Ryan Day is going to save his job after not being able to beat Michigan for 4 years, and is able to come back and not have to hide around Columbus, Ohio. Anymore.
I mean, guys, I know the trustees have their say too, but you can't go to the national championship and then be told you're not a good coach.
Yeah, exactly. No, I Ohio State would have nobody else to replace him with. So I think his job is saved right now. But I think this will save the season for them after the disappointing loss to Michigan. So I think they need a national championship to consider the season somewhat of a success.
What's their record? Was Michigan the spoiler? Were they undefeated otherwise?
No, they were 10-2. They lost to Oregon early,
that's right,
week five. But that loss to Michigan bumped them out of the Big Ten championship game. But yeah, 4 years in a row losing to Michigan. They got to get a national championship to make it right, I think. So they have that to play for. Ohio State has a bunch of seniors who would like to get a national championship before they dip out. So I don't know. I want Notre Dame to win, but like I said, Ohio State's just playing so good right now.
What time is the game on Monday?
It's a night game. I think it's 7 o'clock, 6 or 7.
Okay, so you won't be too distracted in the studio on Monday.
No, I should not be. No, I hope they're not playing the national championship at 2 o'clock. I doubt that. So, but, yeah, we'll see if Ohio State can keep the momentum going and keep playing like they have been playing. This is their best competition yet in Notre Dame, though, I would say. Even though Oregon was the best team, they were kind of flat. They had a bye game. Notre Dame's had time to play. And
Where are they playing?
They're playing in Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Wow, weather coming through, too.
I know. It's in a dome, though. So
it's a dome.
There's that.
Yeah, there's that.
But, yeah, we'll see. If Notre Dame can find a way to stop Ohio State's offense, then that's one thing. I just don't see that happening.
All right. There's number one, which I kind of figured was going to be number one, and it rightfully is number one.
Yes.
All right, what's number two?
Well, it's a big weekend in college basketball as well with SEC play. We got a lot of big ranked matchups. I guess I'll recap some of the games this week, though. Before we do that, Alabama coming off a loss to Ole Miss, Auburn coming off a win against Mississippi State. And also, since we're in Chattanooga now, I might as well talk about Tennessee basketball. They came off with a win of against Georgia. It was a solid win for them. They've rebounded after that ugly loss to Florida that took them down. They're still the sixth ranked team in the country, though. Alabama's game earlier this week, that was probably the worst game they played all year. They couldn't rebound offensively. They were really flat for whatever reason, and Nate Oates did not mince words in his post-game press conference about, players not showing up ready to play. So we'll see if Alabama can turn that around. The SEC schedule is going to be hard for everybody, and if you have an off game, you're just going to lose. So Alabama can't afford to have many off games if they want to, win the SEC. But they're going to Kentucky, which Kentucky is a top 10 team ranked, although a favorable stat. I think they're 335th in the nation in causing turnovers. Kentucky is, which Alabama had 22 turnovers in their loss to Ole Miss. So Kentucky is not a great defensive team, so that plays into their favor. Auburn, still number one team in the country, going to Georgia.
Thank you very much.
That Bruce Pearl, mentioned that this is only the fourth time ever that Auburn was number one going to Georgia. So this is a sort of a rivalry game for Auburn. Georgia's a good team, though, even though they just lost to Tennessee by 18. They're still the 23rd ranked team in the country, so Auburn's going to have their work cut out for them as well. So we'll see. Yeah, it's a lot of top-ranked SEC matchups this weekend. The SEC continues to be the best conference in college basketball.
Absolutely.
That stat, I think I mentioned it last week, the top 16 hardest schedules for teams in the nation is every team in the SEC. So that means every team in the SEC is the top 16 teams with the hardest schedules remaining. So
who has the hardest of the hardest? Who has the hardest schedule?
I can't remember off the top of my head. I know Alabama was like 4. Auburn was 5. Auburn's in the mix, top 5 as well. But yeah, I think I could see the winner of the SEC having like 6 losses, 6 or 7 conference losses, which normally they have like 2 or 3. I could see that happening. So we'll see if there's any big upsets this weekend. But yeah, I'm excited to watch.
So how much of March Madness could actually be SEC?
Shoot, you can get all 16 teams.
I mean, you could.
Yeah, you could. Every team could get a buy or a bid in there. I could see South Carolina not getting in. They're not very good. Maybe one or two more, but I could see like 8 or 10 SEC teams getting in there, which is more than half.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
Yeah, that would be crazy. It looks like SEC's taking over college basketball. It was the ACC. It looks like it's the SEC now, which is fun. Fun to watch.
Yeah. All right. That's number two. With a few minutes left here, what's number three?
I'm excited about this weekend.
Uh-oh.
It is. After 4 weeks of no UFC, we've got our first pay-per-view of the year this weekend, UFC 311.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's actually been a lot of drama today with this card. One of the fighters in the main event had to pull out of the fight. He injured himself last night while cutting weight. He apparently had a back injury, had to pull out of the fight. So the UFC replaced him with somebody who was fighting elsewhere on the same card and bumped them up to the main card. He'll be fighting for the championship belt. So this guy who's training for somebody else got a call, said, "Hey, you want to fight in the championship main event?" Sure. You know, so it's pretty crazy.
Rocky,
you know?
Rocky.
Yeah, that's the sport of MMA. Stuff changes on a dime like that. But also we got other great fights on this card. Jamal Hill is fighting Yuri Prochazka. They also have Marab. Listen how I say these names. Marab Walichvili will be fighting Umar Nurmagomedov for the.
Wow, I'm actually rather impressed. You rolled that right off.
I'm a fan. I know these guys. I think that before the main event got pulled out, the co-main and main event were all four fighters were fighting on the opposite side of the same mountain. It's like two of them from Georgia, one of them from Dagestan, Russia. It was pretty funny. They're both from the same region. But yeah, so now Renato Moicano, who is a Brazilian fighter, will be fighting Islam Makhachev for the championship belt and the main event. When he was supposed to be fighting somebody else and was training for somebody else for, 4 months now?
Something in the water over there in that that region of the country in Georgia. Listen, and
Dagestan, wow. Dagestan, Russia is putting out some of the best fighters in the world. Yeah, the sun.
Is there a style of their own over there or what?
It's wrestling. They are dominant wrestlers. And actually, it's technically called Sambo wrestling, which is if you want me to get in the weeds, it's like mix of – it's pretty much MMA without a lot of the striking. But yeah,
they do a lot of submission holds and stuff. Yeah.
They train from like they're 10 years old. And that's where Islam Makhachev, the number one pound for pound fighter, is from Dagestan himself. So yeah, it's first pay per view of the year. We went through a 4 week drought, and it's already starting off with some drama. Now, you know, I'm not pro gambling. However, I wish Alabama was a gambling state so I could put money on like that plus 1,000. That plus 1,000 for Moicano to win. you know, he's. Listen, that's gutsy of him to take that fight.
So when you pay-per-view these things, do you I mean, like, are you locked into like 6 hours of broadcast or do you have to pay-per-view per fight?
No, you buy the pay-per-view, you get the whole main card, which is five fights. There's a whole prelim, which is free to watch. You can watch that on ESPN, but then once it gets to the last five, you got to pay for it. But it's, you know, part of my birthday weekend. I'm hanging out with a bunch of my friends. We'll be watching the card this weekend, so I'm glad UFC's back on my birthday weekend as well.
Take the cake that Aunt Charlene brought you.
Yes, yeah, I'm sure they would greatly appreciate that. Yeah, it's a lot of great fights, too. I'm a bit bummed that Sarukian had to pull out. That was going to really good fight, but now it just adds more drama. Can the guy pull off the upset?
Okay, yeah. So those of y'all that are UFC fighter fans out there, you just got the lowdown on that. That's we gotta take a break, brother. That is JP on Sports Round One, the three and out, top three stories. You got the UFC card, you got the SEC basketball, and oh, by the way, the national championship in NCAA football is, yeah, Monday. Coming up next, we do the 2 minute warning. 2 minutes on anything sports. But he's got a buzzer he's got to beat. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like making common sense like a superpower. All right, we're back on JP on Sports. And this is the section where we kind of change it around a little bit. He's got we call it the two-minute warning. He can do anything he wants to on sports. He's got 2 minutes in segments, and we have a buzzer to sound if he goes too long. So, JP, I got the stopwatch. I'm ready. 2 minutes, go.
So we're on to the second round of the NFL playoffs. This upcoming weekend, we got the Texans playing the Chiefs, the Commanders playing the Lions, the Rams playing the Eagles, and then the Ravens and the Bills. In the you know, the Ravens and the Bills is the one I'm most looking forward to right there. I think that those are two teams that could probably win the Super Bowl themselves. So that honestly is kind of like my AFC championship right now between the Ravens and the Bills, with how Josh Allen's been playing, and then flip side, how Lamar Jackson's been playing. And then the Ravens decide to get even better and get Derrick Henry, who is you can't guard Lamar, because then they'll just hand it off to Henry and he'll, you know, stiff arm everybody down the field. So yeah, I think I'm most excited for that one. And I think John from Huntsville actually asked me who I think I got in that game. I don't even know who I have in that game right now. I want to say Ravens, but gosh, man, the Bills have been playing so good all year. So I would tab that as my game of the week. But a sleeper one is Commanders Lions too, because, you know, a lot of people may think the Lions, with how they played all year, should walk past that one with ease. Jane Daniels has been on fire this year. He should win Offensive Rookie of the Year. He's already been floated in MVP conversations too as a rookie, which is insane. So we'll see. Maybe the Commanders can pull off an upset against the Lions there. I'm not ready to fully predict that yet, but that's one I would keep an eye on, see if the Commanders can pull that off. Even though the Buccaneers almost upset them round one, I think they'll come ready to play against the Lions there too. And I'll just add in there, I hope that the Texans beat the Chiefs, because I can't stand to see Taylor Swift on another Super Bowl again. You know, I can't stand to watch that happen. I don't want them to three-peat either. So, you know, the Chiefs only had one loss all year, so we'll see if the Texans can pull it off. I don't think that's going to happen, though, unfortunately. But anything can happen, so we'll see. But, yeah, Ravens-Bills, I would say that's my game of the weekend.
I just feel like the Lions ought to have their day. They're so overdue.
Yes, and Dan Campbell has brought that program and that franchise back to life.
All right, there's the buzzer sounds. Next 2 minutes, let me clear the clock for you, resetting it, and go.
So this is a fun story. Staying in NFL, you know, the Cowboys fired their coach, Mike McCarthy, and there's been a lot of speculation about who they're gonna hire next. It's not a very sought-after job. And Troy Aikman himself, you know, who's an icon quarterback for the Cowboys, won Super Bowls there with them, he said himself it's not a much sought-after job because of how Jerry runs things. So there's been a lot of speculation who's going to want that job. There's been a name that's been floating around, and it's Deion Sanders.
Oh, stop it.
Deion Sanders maybe to the Cowboys. You know, his son Shador is going to the NFL, so he doesn't really have much of a reason to stay at Colorado. He apparently also had a heated conversation with the AD, because the Colorado AD doesn't want to buck up with more NIL money, which he says they need. So, you know, and he played for the Cowboys for a little bit. Could this be a match made in heaven with Deion and the Cowboys? It would be fun. You know, it would be – Jerry likes a coach that is really bland and easy to control. That's what Mike McCarthy was.
That's not Deion.
So, you know, we'll see if they bump heads at all. But I don't know. Deion, like I said, there's not much reason for him to stay at Colorado. He made his son, you know, one of the top recruits and top players to come out of the NFL, or out of college football into the NFL draft. You know, maybe he wants to go on to the next challenge of the Cowboys in the NFL.
So you're saying it's not Bill Belichick?
No, Bill Belichick's at UNC right now.
Yeah, you know, I know.
He's
can change.
He's locked in right now at UNC, and he also hired his son to be the DC at UNC. So we'll see if he just hands him the job in like 2 years. But no, I think that's been the biggest name I've heard so far is Deion being floated
around. Deion Sanders coaching the Cowboys. That's just like kind of crazy. All right, there's the buzzer. We reset the clock. 2 minutes, go.
So John from Huntsville was talking about this earlier this week, and I decided to take a look into it myself today and do some homework. The TGL, this indoor golf league.
Yeah.
From Tiger and Rory McIlroy that they made. So it's like a season format. You got six teams with four players on each team. And obviously Tiger is on one of them. We got another one with Justin Thomas and other guys. They've paired it up with the PGA. So it's indoors, like I said, at
SoFi
Stadium. Yes, with artificial turf. They have real bunkers and all that, though. So the format is the first round is triples. So you got a team of three. They play nine holes on this artificial turf. They have a course inside SoFi, I guess. And they play alternate shots. And then the next round, they go to one-on-one singles, where they go to a big screen. Like, it's this massive screen. You know the game where, you know, you hit it on, like, a virtual screen?
Yeah.
So they do that. They go one-on-one on holes. So, like, they play a virtual hole on that screen, like a par three. And that's the second round of it. So they also have stuff like refs where they also have a shot clock. They also have timeouts to where you can ice the golfer. where on the screen and it's a big shot. You can call a timeout and ice the golfer. Yeah. But like I said, it's a season format.
Well, they have dancing bears and stuff too?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. They it's a season format with teams from Atlanta. I think Dallas has one too. And it's they has a whole playoffs with a championship trophy at the end of it too. So I don't know. I haven't watched any of them. I've seen many clips. They have these fun walkouts too with like a fog machine. I saw a tiger come out to Eye of the Tiger, and so it's a fun little league. I don't know how long it'll
last. Is there money in it?
Well, it's Tiger and Rory, so you know, I'm sure they're able to pump as much money into it as they want. But yeah, I think it's fun. I'll have to check out the next one when it comes up. But yeah, we'll see if it survives. It's also paired with the PGA, so they have their help.
And do they make a spectator sport out of it? I mean, like the crowds are there?
Oh, yeah. Big crowds go there. It's in SoFi. It's a football stadium.
So. Wow. There's a buzzer. We got time for another one? How are we doing on clock?
About 45 seconds.
All right, take what you got. Go.
Well, I'll talk about one that kind of hurts because I got the notification during the show, actually, that AJ Minter of the Braves, one of the longtime relievers for the Braves, will be coming to the Mets next year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so not only leaving, but going to a rival for a $2 million contract. You know, the Braves have been very quiet this offseason, which is new for the Braves. You know, although they don't get a bunch of big names, they'll acquire a bunch of pieces, you know, that some, you know, under the radar pieces. They haven't done much. They've lost Charlie Morton. They've lost Max Fried. They've lost AJ Minter now. And a lot of Braves fans are getting kind of antsy.
Have they lost their mojo?
I don't know. I don't think so. I trust Anthopoulos. I think he's the best GM in baseball. But a lot of Braves fans are getting antsy over here, and me being one of them. Yeah. So we'll see. There's still a lot of offseason left, so we'll see if the Braves get in.
All right. Going. That's good stuff, man. The music's playing. That's better than a buzzer. So we are calling it. There you go. That's a whole JP on sports. That flies by when we do that. You do a good job. All right, listen. We got plenty more stuff. We'll come right back. We're jumping into number two on the Triple Dipper. Fiery consequences. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three on a Fri-yay. Oh, by the way, it's the last Fri-yay of the Biden administration. How about that? Don't you like it? I mean, that means tomorrow's the last Saturday of the Biden administration, and then there's the last Sunday of the Biden administration, and then there's no more Biden administration. Good gosh almighty. Can I need some applause. I need something. I need a sound effect. Give me any sound. Can I have a hallelujah? Can we do that? Can we get a hallelujah? I think that is worthy. That is so worthy. You're cracking yourself up on the sound effects, aren't you? Bunch of y'all have been texting in. Let me grab a few of those before I go any further. So I'll say, let's see, Kenny from Huntsville. We were talking earlier about Mel Gibson. He says, if you think Mel Gibson looked young in Mad Max, which he did, he says, please see Gallipoli. I've seen Gallipoli. It's been a long time. But yeah, he says, this was Mel Gibson's first movie and portrayed the Anzac soldiers in World War I trying to invade the Ottoman Empire via Turkey. Tragic story, huge black eye for Winston Churchill. Yeah, I'm aware. It's an amazing story. But yes, I have seen that. He was like a skinny little guy. John from Harvest says, the last weekend of the Biden administration. Man, does that sound good. I said, I feel like an 8-year-old boy the day before Christmas Eve looking at all the presents under the tree. I'm saying, man, I agree. By the way, John also said, Phil, honestly, I'm a little relieved the ceremony for the inauguration he's talking about will be indoors. I was worried about another assassination attempt. I think that the Secret Service is happy it's indoors, to be honest. I think everybody's happier. And I'll just be honest with you. I think that maybe they ought to consider this as the way forward. I mean, why keep trying to do these massive things outdoors? The logistics are crazy. Drones are a problem now. You got any number of issues that can be resolved by doing something like this indoors.
It's going to be beautiful, the rotunda too, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's always been something they've done outdoors or if it just kind of just became ceremonial to do that. But yeah, I would agree.
I don't know. All I know is it's been that way my lifetime that I can recall, but that this is the first time it's moved indoors since 1985, Ronald Reagan. And that was for the same thing, frigid, cold Arctic weather. And I'll be honest with you, we're heading up there. So Charlene and I are heading up there, leaving out to go to the inaugural events. And we were taking polar clothing because standing out among the masses It was going to be 21 degrees with a wind chill of with a real feel of 9, and like a wind chill even worse than that. So, whew. Brian from Huntsville checking in says blanket pardons guilt. He was hoping he had pardoned Corn Pop. Maybe he did pardon Corn Pop. Maybe he did. Maybe that's his way of, you know. Is that Brian on the phone? I just read his text. Well, let's take his call. Brian from Huntsville, line one. Hey, buddy, how are you?
Y'all were talking about all of this and what he's not going to be president for, and he's and last day, he's also not going to be president for the SEC championship game for college football. Ooh-ah.
The NCAA championship game? Yes, absolutely.
No, he won't be anymore, and I'll let it at that point. And, well, dear Brandon, President Brandon, sir, please, please let the door hit you in the tuchus on your way out. Y'all have a good one.
See you, Brian. Yeah, I guess the team doesn't get a call from the White House at the game. Of course, they put it on inaugural day, which is like, who planned that?
Well, the 12-team playoff pushed it back a week. It was normally like this past week. So I think
yeah, but even still, they could look at the calendar and gone.
Or played on a Saturday. For some reason, they're in love with playing Monday night national championship games. I don't know what it is.
Anyway, or maybe there was an indoor golf tournament going on inside the Atlanta Stadium. Jeff from Indiana checking in says, hey, Phil, how's that democracy thing working out? Whenever a Democrat overturns a sentence that the people gave all these criminals, sounds like monarchy to me. It does, and especially when they do it this way. In case you missed it earlier in the show, I talked about the fact that Biden just did another blanket pardon of 2,500 drug offenses simply because he's thinking, I think drug sentencing is too hard these days. I'm going to give a whole bunch of them a pass. Kimball from Harvest says, Phil, in the wake of the fires in L.A., you're getting into my next topic, Californians are rightfully outraged about what appears to be the result of horrendous leftist policies and incompetence. Is the misery enough for Californians to vote for more conservative leaders into office? He said, I have my doubts, as liberalism is a religion. I suspect there's going to be further exodus out. As much as I love California, I'm proud to call Alabama home. Kimball, I'm with you, man. And yeah, that's absolutely the thing. I've got that in my stack of stuff that we're about to dive into here momentarily. Is there going to be political fallout from what's going on with all the fires? You know what? There should be. How about that? Roy from Hartzell says, I would like to think that the crap that Adam Schiff has stirred is about to come around and bite him and really make his eyes bug out. There's a whole lot of visual in that text. Yes.
His eyes already bug out.
That too. Cooter from Huntsville says, War Eagle. Cooter from Huntsville. There you go. That's all you got to say. What more you need? John from Huntsville says, oh, you already got it. You already talked about the Bills, Ravens. He already got you on that one. Mike from Florence says, JP, with college and NFL coming to an end, I expect to hear more about the UFL sometime soon.
The UFL. that's a fun link.
Interesting.
I think that's the one the Stallions won, the Birmingham Stallions won back-to-back championships.
Every time they do one of those alternate leagues, Birmingham always has one of the best teams in the alternate league.
Birmingham had a lot of like old SEC guys that like had short NFL careers, like Bo Scarborough and like those guys come play, and they're really good for them. So AJ McCarron won MVP for the St. Louis team in that league. So yeah, it's pretty fun.
Is arena football still around?
It is. Yeah,
we had a team in Huntsville for a while.
Huntsville had the Vipers. Huntsville had.
I went and watched one of their games years ago.
Oh, we had season tickets to the Vipers game.
Did you?
We still have a glow in the dark Viper football from that. Yeah, the Vipers were awesome, but they're still around. Huntsville don't have a team anymore, though. It's kind of unfortunate.
I think my favorite thing besides the speed of the arena football games, because there was constant movement, was the kickoff bouncing off of a net, and they would turn around and catch it backwards.
arena football is awesome.
Badger from Athens, Dion said no. Did you hear that?
I wouldn't be surprised if he did. He's probably going to say no as of now, but, you know.
Deion Sanders not going to the Cowboys? Yeah. What are you thinking?
Well, no. Money talks, though.
Oh, they pull some NIL on him?
Well, maybe the Cowboys come and say, we'll offer you $500 million. It won't be that much, but you know what I'm saying. Maybe they'll win him over.
We'll give you some Belichick money.
Yeah.
Montesano is jacked up. Don't go that way, says Barry from Gunnersville. Okay, so listen, if you're in the go-home mode on a Friday afternoon and you got to go over Montesano Mountain, we have one report saying it's jacked up. I don't know which way, heading over to Hampton Cove or back into Huntsville, but either way don't sound good. David from Bucky says, Phil, isn't it also the first Friday for the Chattanooga Ruffians? It is. This is.
That's true.
It's the last Friday for the Biden administration. It's the first Friday for our new Chattanooga Ruffians. We're glad to have WGOW 1150 AM in Chattanooga in the Right Side family fold. having some interesting conversations that we'll be able to announce something sometime in the near future, I hope. But right now, yes, we are proud to have Chattanooga, Tennessee, all right there in the Right Side family. I got a few more, and then we'll go to the break. Dave from Madison. Oh, it lost it. Where'd he go? Dave from Madison says, is Trump still doing his big event Sunday? He is, and I'm going to it. So, yeah, Capital One Arena, Trump rally, indoors. Nice. On Sunday afternoon. That should be cool. Mike from Athens, the fires are making way for room to build an Olympic City. I hope that's not the case. Surely not. But wow. JT Lacey Springs, can Trump rescind pardons? No, I don't believe so. The only way he could possibly do that is if he realized that the signature was not real, or they could actually declare Biden to have been incompetent and unaware of what he was doing, which I don't think they will. I think he's aware of what he's doing enough to where that can't happen. I mean, I do think he's slipping. I think he's got some kind of age onset dementia or something. I'm not a doctor. I can't diagnose. But the reality is you can look at him and tell he's impaired. And there are times when it's worse than others. I really think that that Biden's judgment is gone, but his capabilities to go through what they call the functions of daily living is still there. Shane from Athens says, go Dogs. Everybody's chiming in now. This is what you bring out with JP on sports. Bobby from Huntsville says California fire victims are going to really hate their government house insurance that they, their government house insurance that they thought was a deal. If broke, $8 billion in coverage and $377 million in revenue. Listen, they're saying right now, and I've got a piece here that I'll get onto after the break. California fires are now being estimated over $250 billion in damages. Let that sink in. And then Barry from Gunnersville said, it's the going south over Montesano that's the problem. So if you're heading out of town, over the mountain, into Hampton Cove and off towards Gunnersville, you may have issues at Montesano. Might want to find your alternate route. Maybe the route over the mountain down yonder near Jones Valley. I don't know. All right, take me to a break, JP. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. I'm jumping into fiery consequences. Folks, I mean, listen, what is happening in California is a tragedy of biblical scale. But you have to also wonder, what are the potential political fallouts? What's happened that could have been done differently? We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, Dipper number two, fiery consequences. So what's happening out in California has just, oh my gosh, I mean, it's just, what's a good word to describe it? It's just catastrophic. It is of biblical proportions. This is something of an epic level that is unlike any fire ever seen in the history of the United States. And no, I'm not over-exaggerating. Listen to some stats here. You ready for this? Here's the human and property toll. So first of all, I will say this. One piece of relief, and I'm pulling this off the National Pulse Dateline last night. California wildfires are still only under 50% containment. In other words, they got a long way to go yet. But they are saying that the intense winds, the Santa Ana winds that blow in off the coast, that those are expected to subside over the next couple of days. Like we're actually seeing a front come through that they believe is going to change the wind patterns, and that the winds that have been fueling this raging fire that sweeps across entire communities expect to come to a pretty much an end. They're also going to see higher humidity, although I don't know if they have rain in the forecast, but they're looking at things getting to a much more favorable condition for firefighting. That said, you know, they named the fires separately. So the fires right now, like for instance, the Palisades fire, which has been one of the worst. So the Palisades fire has scorched over 23,000 acres, is only 21% contained. The one they refer to as the Eaton fire has burned another 14,000 acres. It only stands at 45% containment. The fires themselves so far have claimed, you ready for this, 25 lives and over 12,000 structures have been destroyed. 12,000 structures are just gutted and gone. Damages are right now estimated at $250 billion. That is making it the most costly fire in U.S. history. That is unreal. There's also still 80,000 people that are under evacuation orders, not able to return to their homes, and they're doing all they can to try and clear this up. And meanwhile, there's stuff happening that you look at and go, good Lord. I mean, why would that be? And what happened over there? There's another part of the state where one of the power plants caught fire. And I don't know yet why that was. I didn't bother putting it in my stack because it was unrelated to these particular fires, it seems. But one of the things we have also seen, though, is that they have any number of instances where it appears that there has been arson involved. Now, listen, I got to look at this and go, okay, that's a massive human and property toll. That's going to be years of rebuilding. You're also going to have a lot of trouble. Insurance in California has been shutting down. And part of that's because California makes it very difficult for insurance companies to operate. And so insurance companies are businesses too, and they start pulling out. So how about this? Here's the idea. State of California, make it easier for people to get insurance instead of harder. That might be a thing you might want to consider. Well, those kind of policies being put in place are some of what's making everything worse. Some of the policies we've been dealing with too are, and I know some of y'all are tracking this already, but I'll repeat a bit of it. When you see things like water conservation policies that are designed to benefit the environmentalist activists, but it means that the reservoir is dry and they can't get water into the fire hydrants, guess what? All you've done is create an issue of life, limb, and property. You may have saved some, I don't know, some allegedly saved some rare species of fish that's trying to get to the Pacific Ocean, but I'm just saying, you burned down half of Los Angeles to get there. Or how about the environmentalist policies that prevent the clearing of massive underbrush and basically clearing land of dry debris that fuels the fires? That's a thing? Yeah, it's a thing. It's just like, you know, cleaning up your house. You just do it periodically, especially when you've got all this open land near highly populated areas. You pretty much have to do it. Fire breaks, those are necessary. Well, those are not natural, and we're just not sure that will be good for the species that live in the area. Well, some of the species are people, so maybe you should.
And it's not natural for the forest to burn to the ground. Say that,
yeah, that's another point, too. Yeah, it's not natural. At least not natural like this.
At least they'll have a home in fire breaks, you know.
Yeah. We had a situation just a few years ago in Northern California where environmentalists were extremely concerned about a spotted owl. I said this on my show the other day. A spotted owl was believed to be, the habitat was in an area that included, you know, tens of thousands of acres that the Department of Environmental Management wanted to get in there and clean out the underbrush and make it, you know, more fire resistant, but they were scared that it would do something to the owl, the activists were. And so they took 10 years to review the policies and let's talk about it and fret a little longer and wring our hands. And guess what? Fire came, ravaged over 10,000 acres. So guess where the owls live now? Not there. In fact, there's probably a few of them that toasted in the process. So this is what these activist wackos do. But then in a minute, when I get back from this next break, I got to tell you, what we've seen in the politicians, not just the activists who are influencing the politicians, but the politicians themselves, you got to look at it and go, where's your head? These are your people. Why would you do what you're doing? I'm going to tell you about some things that weren't just budget cuts. They were budget reallocations that have directly impacted the ability to fight these fires. Not only that, but just the idea of certain appointments being put in place that, I don't know, maybe made things worse. And then, oh, by the way, is there really a recall effort on Gavin Newsom? Well, I would hope so. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. I'm talking about Huntsville to Chattanooga, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden. Big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. So I'm in this section called Fiery Consequences, and I just gave you the sort of the human and the property toll. This is turning out to be the most costly fire season in the history of the United States in California. $250 billion in property damage, 12,000 structures gone, 25 people known killed. Now, I saw another report this morning said, yes, there are 25 confirmed, but there are 36 that they are believed missing. So this very well could go up. I've got a story here from Fox Business. Dateline yesterday. Headline, LA officials were warned about budget cuts to the fire department, saying, quote, someone will die. All right, this is a tough article. In fact, I highlight my notes. I've highlighted almost the entire article. It's hard to say which part of this article I can just leave out. I've got a few these and ands that I left out. That's about it. So LA budget had big cuts. Mayor Karen Bass, who's facing a recall right now, Mayor Karen Bass slashed the fire department's budget by over $17 million this last year. $17 million. Just whacked it off. Got all kinds of criticism for it. In May of last year, L.A. Fire Department Chief Kristen Crowley, she warned, openly warned, we are at the breaking point where firefighters can no longer do more with less. Now, any good leader is going to call for that. I've seen any number of times when there's a little bit of hyperbole and someone calls for needing more and they're just told to get the job done. In this case, you got to look at it and go, wow. Makes sense, especially when you look at it and see Chief Crowley went on the record pleading for funding, saying that they were woefully understaffed compared to other major cities. They have less than one firefighter per 1,000 residents. The average recommended level is 2.5 firefighters per 1,000 residents. They're more than half below where they should be, according to the recommended ratio. They also are sucking wind when it comes to mechanics in the fire department. They got scores of equipment apparently just sitting idle. One LA city council member says, we have million-dollar rigs sitting at the yard right now with no mechanics to be able to fix them. Here's an idea. Bring in contract labor at the very least. My gosh. But it's probably a union thing and they can't do that. I don't know. Fox News reported that next year's budget does call for more mechanics and more replacement vehicles, but it also wants $5 million for the LA Fire Department to charge EVs and $2 million for a diversity and inclusion plan. Well, that's awesome. I'm sure the people whose houses just burned down are really looking to make sure they know whether enough gender equity is going on in their fire department. But perhaps one of the most dire warnings, the article points out, came from the LA Firefighters Union, who told the council members a few weeks before the fires, that if we cut one position, if we close one station, if we close one resource, they said, the residents of Los Angeles will pay the ultimate sacrifice and someone will die. That's about as dire as it gets. And all of that was said and done before the fire season. I've even got where Gavin Newsom appointed a woke adjutant general to the California National Guard who did away with a firefighting detachment that they had that was usually there to assist FEMA and others in coordinating for, you know, disaster relief. I mean, all these decisions, you look at it and think, what? Is anybody going to face any consequences? Is anyone? I mean, is Newsom? Is Karen Bass the feckless? I mean, I watch her in her press conferences, and I'm thinking, the woman has no clue. She's just excited to be there. And yet, you got to wonder, is there going to be any political fallout? So a piece here from townhall.com points out that there is an effort underway right now to recall Gavin Newsom. Now, there's been attempts before. But a talk radio host out in L.A., a guy named Randy Economy, he was actually, apparently, he called himself the senior advisor and media spokesperson for the 2021 recall effort of Gavin Newsom. He says there is a plan underway right now, gaining signatures. And so if you're not familiar with a recall, depending upon the state law, Alabama has no recall law. And these are dicey, by the way. I got mixed feelings on the idea of recall, because once people are duly elected, you still have impeachment. And if you don't want to impeach them, but if you don't believe you can get them impeached because their cronies are the ones who would control the impeachment flow, I guess I get that. But the reality is, a recall, just to make it simple, is where you get enough signatures of duly, you know, notarized electors or voters that agree to a new ballot issue, and it triggers under state law a ballot to see whether or not the person being recalled should be allowed to stay in office. There are nuances to it depending upon what state you're in. Some states have recall, but when they're a certain amount of time, you know, before the end of their term, there's no sense recalling them because you couldn't get the processes done in time. I mean, there's all kinds of little things like that. And then there's also the question of having to verify the authenticity of the signatures on the ballots and to make sure that they're real, not the ballots, the petitions. All of this to say, there is a legitimate recall effort right now on Gavin Newsom. God, and I'll tell you what, man, as much as I am somewhat ambivalent and even a little bit leery of recall votes, because I saw when we got elected in 2010 and we took over the state house, Republicans did in Alabama, one of the first things that happened, I was sitting on a Senate Judiciary Committee, and a now deceased liberal Democrat brought a bill to put recall laws in Alabama. And I looked at him in the committee. It was my opportunity to speak, and I asked for the opportunity, and I was recognized. And I said, "Senator, I have to ask, you've been in the Senate now for approximately 30 years. Why are you just now bringing a recall bill?" And he looked at me, and there was a pause, and he goes, "I just think it's time." Yeah, of course you do. That's because Republicans just took charge. So, yeah, I mean, it can be used for punitive measures. It can be used for, you know, political activity. It can be used for get-backs. And at the same time, you look at Gavin Newsom and go, you are the poster child for why it's necessary. If there's ever a time when you might want recall, please, oh, God, can we get Governor Hairbear out of there and just... So what?
That might be the best nickname I've heard for him yet, Governor Hairbear. That's good.
It just happened. I don't know where it came from. Give me some applause. I'll take it. I'll take it all day long. Just bolster my personal. Yes, I feel good about myself right now. Thank you. Governor Newsom was asked, this article points out, what's your plan to deal with the lack of water to deal with the fires? His response was, local folks will figure it out. And the article points out that is not leadership. Leadership solves problems. Leadership doesn't pass the buck. That's exactly right. So there's a coalition right now that is forming to serve recall papers on Gavin Newsom. They expect to be able to serve him within the next 2 weeks. It cites growing concerns. The article points out over California's rising taxes, cost of living, and ineffective emergency responses. And so I'm just telling you right now, y'all, listen, I don't know how y'all feel about it, but I would love to see Gavin Newsom, like the specter of Gavin Newsom has been looming in the distance. For how long? There's always been this sense that there ain't no way in the world that boy doesn't want to be president. He wants it so bad he can hardly stand it. Can you imagine Gavin Newsom being president? I mean, whereas Biden was... What you got?
I really don't want to.
No, I mean, we're just getting rid of Biden. Mm-hmm. But as Biden was like feckless, ineffective, you're not sure he's even the one making the decisions, I think Newsom is filled with guile and backstabbing and would know exactly what he's doing and would get, you know, just like cackle in the background while he did it.
Finger pointing, you know.
He's like Sauron or something from Lord of the Rings. All right. Newsom is not, and I'd forgotten this. He's been governor now for 6 years. Before that, he was the lieutenant governor for 8 years. And he has no plan for how to handle all these emergencies. In other words, he's been in there now for, what are we looking at? 14 years in a position of leadership for the state, and he has no plan on how to deal with these massive fires and issues that are coming up. So they point out that he did survive a recall petition back in 2021. Okay. The last time a successful recall occurred, I remember this, was 2003. Democrat Governor Gray Davis was recalled and replaced by Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Didn't Schwarzenegger endorse Biden in the last campaign?
Yeah, he said that it's something about how Trump not being for democracy, you know, something like that.
Whatever, Arnold.
I consider Arnold more of a populist than a Republican.
Oh, yeah, I do too. Absolutely.
Or not a conservative.
Absolutely. I read Arnold's biography when I was just like in middle school. It's called The Education of a Bodybuilder. It's very eye-opening. And I've always said if I ever meet him, I'm going to ask about one section that I have used in Bible studies and other stuff many times. I keep the book on my shelf for this very reason. I still got it. He said that at one point when he began bodybuilding, he recognized that he was the reason why he was successful. And he decided at that point he would give no credit to God whatsoever in his life because he was the one sweating. I'm paraphrasing slightly, but that's what he said.
I mean, I mean, he's got a great story, but stuff like that and his politics don't necessarily agree with.
Yep. So it makes you wonder, is Newsom going to be on the outs? Man, I hope so. Good Lord, I hope so. He's term limited, by the way. He's going to be done in 2027 no matter what. That's why people think he's going to run for president in 2028. But his political career, this points out, if this recall is successful, if they can pin some of the aftermath of these fires on his feckless leadership and on his inability to make proper decisions on behalf of his constituents, that his political career could be on ice no matter what. He may be damaged goods at that point. And then it also points out that LA Mayor Karen Bass is the same way, and there's an actual recall effort underway right now on her. So what are the fiery consequences? I think the fiery consequences are we got a lot of people hurting. We got a lot of policies and laws that need to change in California. And the people of the United States, by the way, are going to send them aid money. You know we are, and we should. I get that. That's what FEMA is there for. That's what the emergency proclamations are there for. However, I fully agree with the statement made by Speaker Mike Johnson recently that before we send money to California, we need to know they're not going to keep doing the same things over and over again. They're going to make changes to the way they handle these things. Because if we keep sending them money and it burns up again the next year, what have we done? We're just putting lipstick on a pig at that point. We need some change. So that the people of the state, by the way, we're not just saying that because we're heartless out here. We want the people of the state to have a better life. California is our California. And it's a wonderful place. And it's filled up with awful politics. And the fiery consequences right now are starting to show. All right, we're taking a break. Last break of the day. This would be the last break of Right Side Radio during the Biden administration.
We should celebrate.
Where's
the champagne?
Everything's the last of the Biden administration. Ding dong, the wicked witch is dead. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Making common sense like a superpower. Get a few text messages, then I'll go to the phones. Lisa from Huntsville says, this whole fire situation in California is beyond frustrating to me. She said, I own forest land in South Alabama. I have a land manager that I pay to help with making sure the kudzu doesn't take over, the undercutting gets done, controlled burns happen. I just want to scream every time I hear one of these yahoos in California say, it's climate change. You're right. Because they remind me of Kevin Bacon's character at the end of Animal House screaming, all is well, all is well, as the town falls apart. Yeah. Said, they're not doing proper forest management practices. They're destroying the environment. There you go. Lisa, what a great text. Thank you very much. Joe from Indiana says, I believe history will look back on this as the Newsom-Bass conflagration. Yeah, they could name it the Newsom-Bass fire, couldn't they? Lee from Huntsville says, remember that Gavin Newsom was married to Kimberly Guilfoyle? I do. Don Jr.'s fiance, she has said before in interview that Gavin has always desperately wanted to be president. Having a powerful aunt like Nancy, that's his aunt? Nancy Pelosi's his aunt? I have never heard that.
I haven't either.
Holy crap. That's a power team that we don't need. John from Harvest says, I grew up in California, and that recall of Gray Davis was the first election I ever voted in and got to vote for the governor. How about that? John C. from Madison says, I saw a meme that Karen Bass, L.A. mayor, was part of a revolutionary activist group back in the 70s or 80s. Is that true? I don't know, but I would not doubt it. Jamie from Pulaski, Alabama says, I would love to know who signed the order not to fill the water tank. Yes, and I think that falls on Karen Bass's shoulders, by the way. Marcus Huntsville says, I keep saying the same thing. We send money down to Louisiana for their cities that are built below sea level, right next to the ocean. At some point, we're repaying to rebuild more than we're I know what he's trying to say. We're paying to rebuild from inevitable destruction. I get it. Let me go to the phones real quick. Jeff Rowe from Indiana. Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm coming down to a stop here. So I was doing pretty good until about 2 seconds ago.
So you're back on the road, but you're back on the slow road right now.
Oh yeah, I'm about 30 miles from Nashville, and it's already slowing down this far out. So, you know.
I don't know what it will take. What would they have to do? 8-lane the highway for it to be, you know, moving better? What do you think?
An actual overpass where you just go all the way over top of the city.
You know what? I think there are people that pay for that. Or at least a bypass, for goodness sake. What do you think about all this, man? By the way, what do you think about the fact that Trump just moved his inauguration inside?
I think he's probably wanting to stay warm. It's going to get cold, man.
It's going to get freaking cold.
Now, you know.
Yeah, it's going to get like next level cold. What'd you say, global warming? Is that what you said?
I say he's from Florida, you know. Oh. So, you know, people from Florida, even worse than what you people from Alabama are.
No, like he grew up. He grew up in New York City. He's a Queens guy. He knows. Well.
Yeah, but it don't take long to lose that, though.
I think it was wise. But what? Go ahead.
Did you hear that Joe Biden is not going to retire?
Stop it.
It just come across a while ago. He's going to go into the entertainment field.
Okay.
Jeff Dunham is going to replace Walter with him because he's such a natural. He's been having people's been pulling his strings and putting words in his mouth for 4 years now, so he's just a natural.
Give him some applause too while you're at it. That was worthy. All right. You nailed it with that one. That was good. By the way, that is uncanny how much that mannequin looks like Joe Biden. Is it Walter? Is that his name?
Yeah, but Joe doesn't even need any makeup or anything. They got the hairy ears and the coming out of the nose there and everything else, you know. So, and like I say, you know, people's been putting words in his mouth. He's a natural. He's going to be better than Walter.
Unreal. Well, listen, man, we got about 40 seconds till the music plays, but you be safe on the road, brother.
You all have a good weekend. Happy birthday, JP.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, take care, Jeff. Listen, I gotta have a few seconds here to say this has been my entire time I've been on the radio has been during the Biden administration. I came on the air not long into his first year. And so this is a breath of fresh air for me. This is the last broadcast that I will ever do during the Biden administration. And I cannot tell you how glad I am. I know there's uphill climbs on some things, and we have other things to overcome, and I do not expect that every obstacle will be removed on day one, but you know what? It's still better. Because leadership sets a tone. It does. Leadership sets a tone that allows for things to happen. And I think what we're going to see right now is they're coming in with a mission mindset, and I can't wait. Hey, coming up on Monday, by the way, Charlene and I will be at the inauguration, and so coming up on Monday, JP and Emily will be hosting the show, Scott Buttram hosting it for me on Tuesday. I'll be calling into my own show. In the meantime, y'all, listen, last broadcast of the Biden administration, hallelujah. There's more of us than there are of them, and we proved it. God is still on his throne. He proves it all the time. Y'all stay in the fight. We'll see you.